The United States announces new actions against Russia in response to its invasion of Ukraine.
Today, I'm announcing the United States is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy.
Plus, how to help those traumatized by war.
Combination of, you know, warm heart, intuition, and also understanding of the situation.
And later in the program, how citizens of the world are coming to the aid of Ukraine. Today is Tuesday, March 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Another quick reminder before we begin. On Monday, March 14th, Flashpoint Ukraine will move to its new regular time, Monday through Friday, at 1935 UTC. Today, Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a new U.S. ban on Russian energy.
Today, I'm announcing the United States is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine.
The president said that the ban had strong bipartisan support at home and strong support among allies, although he did acknowledge that some European partners may not be in a position to join the United States in banning Russian oil.
But we're working closely with Europe and our partners to develop a long-term strategy to reduce their dependence on Russian energy as well.
Biden called the ban and sanctions by the United States and others the most significant in history and noted how Russia's economy has suffered.
The Russian ruble is now down to 50% by 50% since Putin's announced his war. One ruble is now worth less than one American penny. One ruble is less than one American penny. And preventing Russia's central bank from propping up the ruble and to keep its value up. They're not going to be able to do that now. We cut the Russians' largest banks from the international financial system, and it's crippled their ability to do business with the rest of the world. In addition, we're choking off Russia's access to technology like semiconductors that are and sap its economic strength and weaken its military for years to come.
Biden ended his remarks by saying that while President Vladimir Putin may continue to grind out his advance at a horrible price,
but this much is already clear. Ukraine will never be a victory for Putin. Putin may be able to take a city, but he'll never be able to hold the country. And if we do not respond to Putin's assault on global peace and stability today, the cost of freedom and to the American people will be even greater tomorrow.
And that Putin's war on Ukraine will have left Russia weaker and the rest of the world stronger. Now, 13 days into the brutal war in Ukraine, President Putin has failed to subjugate Ukraine. He appears no closer to replacing its defiant government with a puppet regime as well. At first glance, opinion polls suggest Putin has a majority backing for what the Kremlin dubs a special military operation in Ukraine. But how long will the majority of Russians back even a special military operation as Western economic sanctions bite and more Western brands and businesses, as well as investors, exit Russia? That's the question I put to Jamie Detmer, who's following the story for VOA.
Well, that's the million-dollar question. It is now a much of a live debate amongst Western officials and independent analysts thinking if this war protracts, prolongs, which it looks likely to, how much damage does Putin sustain before Russians turn against him? I mean, the viewpoint seems to be that we may be seeing the beginning of the end, but it may have to play out for several years. In terms of the elite support, he still has it. The security personnel around him, the so-called oligarchs, the oligarchs are totally dependent and reliant on him for their wealth and for their power. And then in the broader public, we're looking at, yes, over 60% public support for the special military operation. But some pollsters have pointed out that's rather skewed, that if you'd asked them the question in a different way and talked about an invasion, you might have seen a reduction in support. Now, I mean, one of the big challenges that the protesters in the past have found when they have tried to galvanize a wider Russian public to support them is that really about half of the population, slightly more, are dependent for their jobs on the state. So there's a built-in advantage for Putin in that. But this time, people feel that the great Kremlin narrative of the Putin years is that he saved the country from the terrible economic instability of the first post-Soviet decade, the 1990s. And he's played that in election campaigns really ever since. That narrative is rather stripped bare by what we're seeing unfolding in Russia at the moment.
Speaking of what's unfolding in Russia at the moment, former Russian President Boris Yeltsin, the daughters of the Russian Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov have all come out and, opposed the military invasion, let alone the thousands who were arrested over the weekend for protesting openly in Russia. What is the sense, or what is your sense of the backlash that Putin is facing domestically?
Well, I mean, I think at the moment it's very much focused on the younger generation, the far more educated ones, the ones who access independent news from the internet and elsewhere. And their jobs are more in the private sector, so they're losing their jobs. And a lot are leaving. Thousands have left. Thousands apparently are looking at leaving. So you're seeing a generation of skilled people seeing no future in Russia. Now, one of the disadvantages, of course, of that for the protesters and the anti-Kremlin opposition groups is that they're going to find they're denuded of the people who will protest because they won't be in the country anymore. But it is quite remarkable that despite a very repressive crackdown on dissent, there have been protests in 115 cities across Russia, and we've had about 6,000 or 7,000 arrested. But again, we come down to this point that unless a broader swathe of the population join the protest or turn against Putin, then I think we're looking at him surviving, even if he's defeated in Ukraine or the war prolongs, surviving still for a number of years.
Reporter Jamie Detmer in Warsaw, Poland. Australia announced a new set of sanctions on Russia for its invasion of Ukraine, including against people identified as Moscow's propagandists and purveyors of disinformation. Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said in a statement on Tuesday that Canberra is sanctioning 10 people of, quote, strategic interest to Russia. Payne said that the propaganda includes driving and disseminating false narratives about the denazification of Ukraine, making erroneous allegations of genocide against ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine, and promoting the recognition of the so-called Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic as independent, and that's referring to the two disputed areas in eastern Ukraine. Payne also announced a new round of financial sanctions against Russia armed forces, which prohibits the export of goods from Australia to entities that supplies Russia's military, as well as financial sanctions and travel bans against an additional 6 senior Russian military commanders. Meanwhile, in New Zealand, a groundbreaking law is expected to pass this week that would enable it to freeze the assets of those associated with Russia. The new Russia sanctions bill, in response to its invasion of Ukraine, would allow authorities to target individuals, services, companies, and assets. Phil Mercer continues our coverage.
New legislation would allow New Zealand to impose sanctions on an individual country for the first time. The South Pacific nation can now implement sanctions only when the United Nations Security Council has imposed them. Russia's veto in the council, however, has prevented that from happening. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said her government's unilateral penalties, prompted by the invasion of Ukraine, would freeze Russian assets in New Zealand and stop superyacht ships and aircraft owned by targeted individuals from entering the country's waters or airspace. The measures would extend to Russian oligarchs and countries that support Russia, including Belarus. The government in Wellington has also released a list banning 100 individuals from travelling to New Zealand. Ardern said Monday the new laws would strike a financial and political blow on Russia.
It will target those of economic or strategic relevance to Russia, including oligarchs. The sanctions will freeze assets located in New Zealand. It will also prevent those who are sanctioned from moving assets to New Zealand or using our financial system as a backdoor to get around sanctions increasingly imposed by other countries.
New Zealand's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nania Mahuta, said Tuesday that international sanctions placed on Russia would act as a wall of resistance and send a message to Moscow that the invasion of Ukraine was wrong. The Australian government said it would be introducing more punitive action on Russia's propagandists and purveyors of disinformation. Its Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said Tuesday that financial sanctions would target members of the Russian military who were responsible for implementing naval ground and airstrikes on Ukraine. Payne said the Canberra government was also working with Facebook, Google and Twitter to take action to suspend the dissemination of content generated by Russian state media within Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. With the number of refugees fleeing the fighting in Ukraine surpassing 2 million on Tuesday, what's the longer-lasting impact these events will have on their lives? Ava Oshosenska is a psychologist who lives in Warsaw, Poland, and I spoke with her earlier today about how she's helping those settling in Poland after escaping the trauma of war. She began our conversation by speaking about the importance that teachers have in helping refugees.
Because there are already newcomers to the Polish schools of the children who've been, transferred from Ukraine to Poland. For most of them, it's just the first time abroad, the first time without mother or father or and the family at all. And they are put in a foreign environment. And so the teachers and the other pupils in the class need to help those children, Ukrainian refugees, need to help them get integrated. And unfortunately, many of people in Poland consider their own, heroism and their own dedication to the cause of helping the refugees as compassionate care of them. On the one hand, it is very good, but on the other, it is immediately making those people who are shattered by their, traumatic experiences, very recent, they place them below their benefactors. And that is not good. So this is like an intentional victimization for the second time.
Ava, I was wondering if you can explain a little bit about what you're doing to help those who are running from the conflict in Ukraine.
I am empowering the gatekeepers, like the civil people who are taking those Ukrainian people to their homes. This is one category of population. The other is teachers. The other is lawyers. The other is the police. And perhaps there will be other, some other also. And what I am doing is I am showing that if we don't have access to a psychiatrist, we may, just by ourselves, with a combination of, warm heart, intuition, and also understanding of the situation of a scared person, adult or minor. And this is easy. So when I work with those groups. I usually get a response. Oh, thank you, Eva. Yes, now I understand.
Is that all that's needed? A little compassion and showing that you care enough to begin the process to allow them to heal?
People who are traumatized and people who are scared, paradoxically, they are not defending themselves from showing trust because it is like atavism. They are longing for somebody who gives them rescue. So when they only sense a signal that somebody is not threatening them, they will go for it.
Eva, I want to ask you another question because you mentioned that you speak to a large swath of the Polish population in that community groundswell of support that's being offered to Ukrainian refugees. One of the groups that you speak with are children. Do you find that child refugees sometimes perhaps respond better to child peers, caregivers?
I think so. I think so, with the exception when the parents are prejudiced or racist or very close-minded, narrow-minded. And that, of course, happens.
Eva Oshasenka is a clinical psychologist living in Warsaw, Poland, where she's assisting community members help those escaping from war in Ukraine. Eva? Thank you.
You're welcome.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on Monday defended his neutral stance on Russia's invasion of Ukraine, calling for talks and not condemnation. Critics have blasted the government for failing to support Ukraine against its neighbor, and analysts say that South Africa is allowing historic political and economic ties with Moscow to risk relations with the rest of the world. Linda Givtash has that story.
Negotiation, rather than weapons or economic pressure, is the mechanism South African President Cyril Ramaphosa would like to see used to settle the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Ramaphosa's unwavering stance, reiterated Monday, overruled a call by the country's International Relations Department for Russia to withdraw its forces. Lisa Jernberg is a Johannesburg-based international researcher and consultant on diplomacy.
The Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and is largely the diplomat for South Africa. Their initial instinct was to say, well, this is not acceptable. And it was kind of pulled back by the president, who I think has this, you know, concern about allies in Russia and what it looks like. So even within South Africa, South Africa's position is very contested, even within government.
South Africa's ties to Russia stretch back to the 1960s, when the Soviet Union gave support to anti-apartheid freedom fighters. In subsequent years, politicians, including those from the ruling party, the African National Congress, maintained close ties with Russia, which is why analysts say it's no surprise that a foundation headed by former President Jacob Zuma has voiced its support for Russia's Vladimir Putin. Richard Calland is a public law professor at the University of Cape Town.
He had a very close relationship with our former president, Jacob Zuma. It was a corrupt relationship. It fueled an illegal, in the end, the court said, illegal procurement of Russian nuclear power, which was stopped by the courts. And I fear that that interferes at least with some political attitudes in South Africa, but I don't believe that it was the direct reason for the position that South Africa's taken.
Instead, Callan says South African officials are simply following the country's standard position on foreign conflicts.
I'm well acquainted with and in close contact with South Africa's kind of senior diplomatic officials, and they are very steeped in this tradition of non-alignment. Political dialogue is their middle name, so to speak. And I think that on this one, they wanted to maintain this kind of non-partisan position in order to promote that dialogue.
Another factor at play is the country's position with the economic bloc BRICS, which includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Analysts say South Africa may be attempting to maintain trade relations with Russia and China, but international relations expert Jernberg says that stance is ultimately counterproductive.
In that case, we're actually backing the wrong horse. When you look at the EU, the European Union as a bloc, South Africa's combined trade to the European Union is actually far larger. And so then if you're going to make an economic argument, you should surely be arguing that between the United States and between and Europe is actually of greater economic interest.
Whatever the motives, it has Western nations siding with Ukraine disappointed, and experts warn there could be implications for South Africa in the future. Ina Gouws is a political science lecturer at South Africa's University of the Free State.
These kinds of things down the road become problematic. And if you don't display that kind of cooperation and sound thinking and strong condemnation when a country does something like this, down the road it bites you when you need support from the international community.
While the ramifications for South Africa remain unclear, experts agree it's unlikely the country will change its position anytime soon. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And finally, Americans and Canadians are among the thousands of volunteers responding to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's plea for help in fighting the Russian invasion. VOA's Maxim Moskalkov rounds us out.
On March 3rd, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said 16,000 international volunteers are making their way into Ukraine to help the country fight the Russian invasion. Volunteers from Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, and Israel were among the first ones to arrive in Ukraine. British media reports about 150 UK volunteers have joined Ukraine's military. And volunteers from Georgia, Croatia, France, and other countries are also joining the fight against Russia. Some US and Canadian volunteers said they are disappointed their countries have not sent troops.
They have left Ukraine completely alone. Over the past few days, I've been doing my best in order to provide volunteers who are planning to go to Ukraine to fight or perform humanitarian work with as much information and advice as I can possibly give them.
Mike Newt is a research scientist at Rice University in Houston, Texas. He decided to help pay for two volunteers to get to Ukraine.
Someone said that they were coordinating volunteers and donors, and I reached out to them, and I felt like donating and just not even donating cash, but just buying a plane ticket for these two people that they had put me in touch with was a way to, you know, bring two extra people to the fight. And it was the next best thing to be able to go myself.
The volunteers include a 20-year-old paramedic from Rhode Island and a U.S. Army veteran from Tennessee. 33-year-old Canadian cook Bryson Wools is responding to Zelensky's plea for help. He plans to volunteer even though he has no military experience.
Well, really, the only really experience I have is cooking. And, you know, if they need a cook, I'm more than happy to do that. If they need to be on the front line, I'll do that. If they just want me to dig trenches or fill the sandbag, you know, I'll do that too. I just want to be able to help in whatever way I can.
But there are risks. Last week, the spokesman for Russia's Ministry of Defense warned that foreign fighters would be considered mercenaries and may not be protected under humanitarian guidelines that protect prisoners of war. U.S. officials have also been cautious and continue to urge all U.S. citizens to leave or stay out of Ukraine. Instead, State Department officials are urging Americans to support humanitarian organizations providing aid and relief to the Ukrainian people. And millions of people around the world are supporting the Ukrainian people by donating to foundations and charity organizations like CARE International.
CARE is famous for the CARE package. The CARE packages were delivered by the U.S. in the aftermath of World War II. And for example, my grandparents were receivers of CARE package, and also my parents, and they were in some cases life-saving.
Barschdorf Hager says that the organization's goal at the moment is to offer emergency assistance to at least 4 million people. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Don't forget, on Monday, March 14th, we change times to 1935 UTC. And on that note, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but news and events from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.